Our show is supported by Be My Guest with Ina Garten, Ina's official podcast from Food Network, back for its fourth season. On every episode, Ina invites a different friend to her home in the Hamptons to talk about life, love, and career, all while cooking up an amazing meal. Join Ina as she crafts a classic cocktail with journalist Frank Bruni and discusses the ins and outs of Yorkshire pudding with actress Emily Mortimer. If you're looking for great conversations about and over good food, tune in to Be My Guest with Ina Garten. Listen to Be My Guest with Ina Garten wherever you get your podcasts. Hey, it's Francis. This week, we're just cooking with a couple of great cooks. Chef Manit Chauhan and author Dawn Perry in an episode last year designed to get you out of your cooking rut. Check it out. I'm Francis Lamb, and this is The Splendid Table from APM. Hey, I don't know about you, and okay, this is not necessarily the greatest thing for me to admit, but I get sick of cooking sometimes. I mean, I can have all kinds of feelings about cooking. Sometimes I get nervous, sometimes it feels like the absolute best thing, and sometimes I'm just over it. Well, if you ever feel that way, I hope this episode helps shake things up a little for you, because sometimes, for me, all it takes is an idea I didn't think of, or a flavor I just want to try, and we get plenty of that from Chef Manit Chauhan. Later in the show, we have Dawn Perry, who's got some real talk about what it's like being a recipe developer with kids to feed every day and how to really make the most out of whatever you've got. And finally, I'm so excited to introduce you to Jesse Sparks, the host of our new podcast, The One Recipe. But we're going to start with Manit. So casuals know Manit Chauhan as the always thoughtful and kind judge on the show Chopped. But before she was eating squid burritos with gummy bear gastrique, she was one of the chefs who helped pave the way for Indian-inspired fine dining in our country. And now has a whole bunch of casual global restaurants in Nashville. She's also the author of Chaat, Recipes from the Kitchens, Markets, and Railways of India. I'm so happy to get to talk with her. Chef Manit, it's great to talk with you.
It's great to talk with you too.
It's been a little bit. So, you know, I was thinking, I've been a fan of yours for so long. I've enjoyed your food, you know, I've loved talking with you. And it occurred to me, I don't think we've ever really talked about how you got started. So maybe we'll just start there. When did you realize that you wanted to be a chef?
So there's a running joke in my family that I was born with a ladle in my hand. So my obsession with food goes as far back, I think, pretty much since the time I was born. The story is that my older sister, before I had even started solids, she fed me some of my mom's potato-stuffed paranthas, flatbreads, and I think that was it. I had tasted yumminess for the first time, and I was not going to give it up. And, you know, in India, each and every state and region has a very distinct cuisine of its own.
Yeah, for sure.
I was really fascinated. I grew up in a Punjabi household where my mom's cooking was very Punjabi. But after I would eat dinner at home, I would go over to my neighbor's houses, tell them that my parents hadn't fed me, so can I eat with you guys? And I would just sit on their dining table and enjoy ingredients and techniques which I didn't see in my own house. So that's basically what it started. You know, like the love of food started from the love of eating. And then I decided that this is what I wanted to do for the rest of my life.
Oh, that's so interesting. And I know that you went to like hospitality management school in India.
Yes, I did my undergrad in India, and then I came here to go to the CIA, the Culinary Institute of America in Hyde Park.
And then you went back to India. So, like, stylistically, did you have a sense that you wanted to cook? You know, I went to the CIA as well, and, you know, I really appreciated my education there, but it was obviously very grounded in Western, you know, primarily French methods and techniques. Did you have a sense stylistically that that's what you wanted to do? Or did you want to take that training and do something else with it? What was your thinking at that time?
So my thinking, when I came from India, I came to the CIA to do baking and pastry arts. Because in India at that time, you did not have these, like, pastries had not reached that level. But then when I came over here to the CIA, I was the only Indian on campus for the better part of my time there. And I decided to take some of my friends to eat Indian food. And we went and found the one Indian restaurant, in the Poughkeepsie Hyde Park area at that time. And we were eating and my friends are looking at me and they're like, yeah, that's good. And I eat the food. I'm like, this is not the food that I grew up on. Like Indian food is not $8.95 all you can eat curries with too much spice, too much oil on it. That's not what it is. What I grew up on was three fresh meals a day, which was seasonal, right? Like red carrots, you would get only 2 weeks in the entire year. Mm. Get it? Or don't eat it that year. And that, I think, that's when I started changing my viewpoint about what I wanted to do. I really, at that time, decided that now I want to tell, you know, at least America about the beauty of Indian cuisine. And it's not $8.95 all-you-can-eat buffet. It's so much more than that. It's complex. It is beautiful. It is seasonal. It's all about building layers of flavors and textures. And that's how the obsession to show the world about the beauty of Indian food really started.
Oh, that's so interesting. And I think about the fact that you said you grew up in a community where there were many people from different regions, different states there. So you were exposed to lots of different regional cuisines. As you're talking about seasonal food, you know, I had to walk over slushy puddles to get here today. You know, it's been freezing cold the last week. So I'm wondering, what is winter like in Punjab where you grew up?
Oh, my God.
And what are some of the seasonal foods?
You know, Punjab, I think winter is the most exciting time in terms of food, right?
Oh, interesting.
And my fondest memory is going to one of my grandmom's, brother's villages. And they had these citrus farms called kinos. And we literally would be walking through the farms with a small hand juicer, pluck the quinoas or the citrus, cut it and have fresh juice, right?
Oh, wow.
And sugarcane. This is the season where sugarcane was being harvested. So we would literally see gur or brown sugar or the Indian version of pelencio being made in front of us. The sugarcane being juiced, that being reduced. And they would just take a leaf, take out a little bit from the boiling big vat of gur and just give it to us. They're like, eat this. Or carrot halwa, gajar halwa, which was made with only red carrots. Or just, you know, sitting in the sun while bhaturas or these like, you know, deep fried breads with garbanzo beans on the side are being made. So winter, I think, is an amazing eating time in Punjab because there is a lot going on. My grandmom, she would make like, you know, turnips or shalgam. That was the only time you would get it. And carrots, cauliflower and turnip achar or pickle that she would make. So it's like winter was incredible.
Tell me a little bit about the achar, those pickles, because they're quite different from, you know, if you think of pickles as being steeped in vinegar or you think of pickles as just being salted and then sort of pickled in its own, you know, brine, they're quite different.
They're very different. They are heavily spiced, oil in it, salt, sugar. So everything that kind of inhibits the growth of bacteria, that is, you know, added to it. And the most, I think, important part of the pickling process was that whatever we were pickling needed to be dried in the sun, right?
Okay.
And then the spices were added to it. And then we would put it in a kind of a ceramic container back in the sun. So one of our jobs, you know, as kids was, as soon as we would get up in the morning, our responsibility was to take that pickle jar, take it out, leave it in the sun. And then as the sun would move, we were responsible for moving the pickle jar along with that. And it was, I think, at least for a week, it would be cured in the sun. And then when our winter holidays would be done, our grandmom would dole it out in these containers and we would get it back home with us. And that would last us an entire year. Because with Indian pickles, you just have a little bit of it. It's an accompaniment because it's potent, it's flavorful, it's spiced. And my mouth is watering while I'm talking about these. but it is, I think, such a quintessential accompaniment to any Indian meal, be it paranthas or rice with some dal, just works beautifully.
Oh, that's awesome. Let's go to some of our listener questions, because we've got so many listeners who called in with cooking questions for you. So maybe let's get to them.
That sounds amazing.
All right, let's go to Hawaii.
Aloha from Maui, Hawaii. I want to know how I can make flavorful, clear chicken broth. Mm. Mine always seems to turn out brown and cloudy. Thank you. Aloha.
Okay, so this might get back to our days in like French chef training, but what do you do when you're making broth or stock?
So I rely a lot on spices and aromatics. So when I make a chicken broth, I do put ginger and garlic in it, and I think that adds a lot of flavor to it. I do go ahead and add whole spices, not ground spices, because that will make the broth very murky. So whole spices like cardamom, which gives it a little bit of sweetness. I do cinnamon sweetness again, some cumin seeds, smokiness.
Oh, that sounds awesome.
I do arbol chili or Kashmiri chili, which gives it a little bit of spice. And then I with the rest of the aromatics, the OCCL, the onion, celery, carrots and leeks. And the one thing is that if you really want a clear broth, I will go back to the basics, Francis, as you were saying, right? To make a raft. And a raft is pretty much, you take some eggs along with the eggshells, right? And you crush it and you put it in the broth. So what happens is that this acts as a magnet, and all the impurities, it gets, pulled to the egg, and then you can just remove it towards the end. And that's how you get a really clear broth. But my big thing is, if you don't want to do that, don't use ground spices, use whole spices and then strain it out.
Yeah, yeah. Well, this, I was going to say, oh, just cook at really low heat. And you can skim off the top if you want, but you went hardcore and you went with the raft. That's getting back to
Culinary 101.
Yeah, that's definitely like skills 3 and trying not to get yelled at by breaking my raft up too much in the broth by mistake. But yeah, that is a really that's a very high level technique and a beautiful one. Yeah. And it's really cool too, because and sometimes in the raft you can do just the egg whites and eggshells, or you can add a little bit of like diced tomato, I remember, for a little bit of acid that helps that sort of reaction. And you can actually use some lean meat, some lean ground meat as well. And you create this, it looks awful. I mean, it just looks like a mess.
Totally.
And you pour it into the pot and you're like, oh my goodness, what am I doing here? But what happens is it as it cooks, it coagulates and it floats at top. It's basically, like you said, it's a net, and it just kind of picks everything up as it floats at the top of the broth. And it does really clarify it. You should read up on it. I wouldn't just like throw some eggs into a pot, you know, like there's a technique to it, but you can definitely try that. And it actually does add a lot of flavor as well, a lot of like just sort of clean, deep flavor. It's really a really amazing technique. We're talking with Manit Chauhan, chef owner of Chauhan Ale and Masala House in Nashville, and we'll be back with more in a minute. I'm Francis Lam, and this is The Splendid Table from APM. Our show is supported by Hero Bread. You know, for a lot of us, bread has been a staple all our lives. Toast at breakfast, sandwiches at lunch, a nice buttered roll at dinner. It's comforting and delicious, and bread is often what we crave. But sometimes, it can sit a little heavy after a meal. That's where Hero Bread comes in. They've created fluffy, delicious versions of the breads that we're used to, but that include no net carbs, 0 grams of sugar, and fewer calories. Oh, and there's more good stuff too, like protein and fiber. Hero Bread has everything from your daily sandwich loaf to tortillas or hot dog and hamburger buns. The products are flavorful and they have something for every craving, from a dressed up breakfast burrito to a late night PB&J. They even have monthly small batch drops of indulgent treats like 2 gram net carb Hero croissant or the 1 gram net carb Hero cheddar biscuit. Don't give up being a breadhead. Hero Bread is offering 10% off your order. Go to hero.co and use code TABLE at checkout. That's TABLE at hero.co. Our show is supported by Be My Guest with Ina Garten, Ina's official podcast from Food Network, back for its 4th season. In every episode, Ina invites a different friend to her home to talk about life, love, and career, all while cooking an amazing meal. Listen as Ina does what she does best, make good conversation and delicious food, while making it sound fun and easy. This season, Ina dives into conversation with astronaut and colonel Nicole Mann. As Ina teaches Nicole how to make seared scallops with celery root puree, they talk about everything from family to what foods Nicole really craves when she's in space. And listen in as Ina and Pulitzer Prize-winning writer David Remnick talk about music lessons and the value of developing language skills before joining their spouses for a lively conversation over a comforting dish of chicken parmesan. If you love a good chat over a great meal, you'll love Be My Guest with Ina Garten. Listen to Be My Guest with Ina Garten wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Francis Lamb, and this is the show for curious cooks and eaters. We're here with Manit Chauhan. She's the author of the cookbook, Chopped, Recipes from the Kitchens, Markets, and Railways of India. And we're taking some of your cooking questions. Let's go back to her. So let's go to Julie.
Hi, Francis. I live in Southern California. I normally grill fish, but sometimes it's just too cold. So I wanted to get some ideas of different ways I can prepare flash frozen fish from Alaska of several different varieties. And I want to know what ideas you have for me on ways to cook them. Thank you.
All right. Well, thank you for that question, Julie. I like that Julie in Southern California says sometimes it's too cold to grill fish. If I had a fish fillet in my bag on my way here, it would have frozen between between locations. So I'm sorry you can't grill your fish right now, but if you have frozen fish, actually, Chef, let me ask you this. What are your feelings on frozen fish? Because I'm sure in the restaurant, you're probably focused on, you know, using super fresh fish for your guests, but...
I, you know what? I wear two hats. One is a chef hat. So what I am serving at the restaurant is probably not what I expect home cooks to do. I do think that frozen fish is okay when you are cooking at home. And there are a couple of things that, you know, that I do. One is if you want to emulate, you know, the grill, the char of the grill, go ahead and treat the fish exactly how you would when you would grill it. Throw it into the oven on the topmost rack with the broil setting, right? But keep an eye on it. What happens with the broil setting is that you get a lovely char on the top. And if it's too cold to be grilling outside, you can do that. The other thing that I love to do with fish is, it's an Indian dish. It's called a patrani machli. Basically, get some banana leaf. You make a kind of a apapiyot, which is you wrap the fish, which I make a marinade of cilantro, mint, coconut, salt, lime, chili. Very fresh, right? Put it all over the fish, wrap it up in a banana leaf.
Like ground up?
Or? Yeah, just make a paste out of it.
Okay, great.
And, you know, just marinate the fish. Again, when you are marinating fish, you need to do an instant marinade. You do not leave it in the marinade for a long time, because then you're going to get ceviche, because the marinade is going to start breaking the fish down. So fish is one thing you do not leave overnight in the marination, as you do with other proteins. So if you don't have a banana leaf, put it in a piece of foil, nicely seal it, throw it into the oven. So what is going to happen is that the fish is going to steam, right? And that is beautiful and healthy and delicious. So that's one thing I do. You can also always, you know, pan fry the fish, or you can make a curry out of it. I can spend hours saying what you can do with fish, but I think these are some of the easy and fast techniques of working with fish.
Yeah. And I love that you mentioned banana leaves, because that's something that, you know, you do find pretty commonly in the frozen aisle.
But the problem with frozen banana leaves are that they are usually, because they are frozen, they are torn. So even if I'm using frozen banana leaves, I wrap the fish in the frozen banana leaves and then I wrap it up in foil so that the steam is contained and it is trapped in the packet.
Okay. Oh, that's a great idea. So I, at home, I actually cook with frozen seafood much more than I thought I would, honestly. What I do find with some frozen seafood is that, you know, it does tend to weep a little bit. Some of the juices, you know, kind of come out when it's defrosting. And so it's a little harder to do things where you're doing like high heat searing, crisping the skin. Like, I don't do that much. What I've found is, like, it's so easy to make a nice base for a stew or a soup, and then, you know, pre-season the fish with a little bit of salt and literally stir it in, you know, dice it or whatever, and just stir it in 2 minutes before it comes off the stove. The fish basically cooks almost instantly, and you have like a beautiful fish soup or a beautiful fish stew. And Julie, that's totally another way to use that fish you have. It adds its flavor and its body to the dish, and it's great. I do that all the time.
Sounds delicious. I'm getting hungry.
All right, let's go to Jane.
Hi. I have a lot of split peas, yellow and green split peas in the pantry, bags and bags of them. And what can I do with them besides make soup? This is Jane in New York. Let me know. Thanks. Bye.
Jane, split peas are...
Yeah, I know you have split peas.
Yeah, so many recipes. They are a staple in any Indian household. So they are a lot of soups, absolutely. They are a great way to go about, you know, using it. But the other thing you can also do is you can make these croquettes. There are these Indian, you know, shami kebabs. So basically, you can take some of the split peas, get your favorite meat. It can be, you know, lamb, chicken, beef, whatever. Put it in the broth, put some of your favorite spices in it, and let it cook till the time the lentils, they start breaking apart and the meat starts breaking apart. And then you can go ahead and let it cool, add some panko to it, some eggs to it. I love adding ginger garlic, chopped onion, cilantro, mint. And then you can go ahead and form croquettes out of it. Just pan sear it or deep fry it. And you can make, you can just eat it by itself with some chutney or sauce on the side. Or you can make burgers out of it. This is something that you can make in advance and throw it in the freezer. And as you need it, you can take it out and, you know, bake it or sear it. So that is, you know, it's almost a take on a shami kebab that is an Indian dish. So that is something that you can make.
I had no idea.
The other thing that you can do is you can dry roast it and make a powder out of it. And that powder you can use, you can use not only in, you know, just kind of making a roux out of it, like with butter, roast the powder, put some milk in it. That could be a base for a roux. And then make mac and cheese out of it. It'll give it a lot of flavor. Get some lentil, you know, macaroni. And so it'll be absolutely amazing and flavorful and delicious. Or you can add it in any of your pot pie that you are making. So there is...
blowing my mind.
These are the basics, because I can take it to the next level of we can make breads out of it. We can make... there is a spinach and a lentil bake that I do. So there is so much that you can do. Lentils are used as soups in Indian cooking, but they're also used as thickeners. They're also used as flavor enhancers.
This is really, really, really interesting. First of all, I had no idea that's how you make shami kebabs. I love shami kebab. And
see,
I didn't realize,
you know.
you cook the lentils and meat in water, essentially.
In water and a lot of aromatics in it.
And you just cook it until it all kind of
disintegrates
apart.
So traditionally, shami kebab is made with goat meat, right? Okay. But you can use anything. So the idea is you're just braising it for such a long time that it just is fork tender, like it's falling apart.
And how much like lentil do you use to meat? What would the ratio be?
1:2.
Okay.
So one portion of lentils to 2 portions of meat.
Okay, so like 1/2 pound of lentils to 1 pound of meat.
Exactly. That's basically it. 1:2, yeah.
Okay. And how much liquid? Like how thick or how thin should it be before you
So I cover it with liquid. And if you want more flavor, get some broth, like, you know, get some stock, some beef stock or some chicken stock, like to give it more flavor. Mm-hmm. I cover it, and by the time it is done, it'll be almost like a paste.
Oh, wow.
So it's not going to be liquidy at all. And once you cool it, then it is going to get drier still.
Okay. And then to that, you add breadcrumbs, eggs, yes. like your spices, ginger, yes. garlic, and you form that in the patties and pan fry. Oh, that's yes. so good. I've never made shami kebab, so I'm so excited.
I'll send you a recipe. It's easy, but it's also very flavorful.
Perfect. Well, all right, Chef, this has been a blast. Thank you so much. I'll look for that recipe. We'll share it with our listeners as well. And I hope you have a great rest of your winter.
Thank you so much. Always such a pleasure catching up with you.
Yeah, the same. Manit Chauhan is the author of Chaat, Recipes from the Kitchens, Markets, and Railways of India. She left us with a recipe for that Punjabi sweet, Khajur Ka Halwa, carrot pudding with saffron and pistachios. Find it splendidtable.org. And hey, spring is here, or near-ish. What are you dreaming of eating and cooking? What questions do you have? We'd love to help you out. Record your cooking questions as a voice memo and email them to contact@splendidtable.org. Dawn Perry is a food media pro's pro. She's had positions everywhere from 3 Michelin star restaurants to Bon Appetit to Martha Stewart's meal kit service, and was the food director at Real Simple. And she is also really tired of cooking sometimes. But she helps us find our strength to help keep going in the kitchen, and she's the author of the new book, Ready, Set, Cook: How to Make Good Food with What's on Hand. So hey, Dawn, it's great to have you.
It's great to be here. Thank you.
I feel your mac and cheese pain. I really do.
The parents get it.
So for our listeners, the mac and cheese story comes from an op-ed that you wrote for the Washington Post that was basically about how, you know, even as a food professional that spent your entire career telling people, hey, cooking at home is great and it's easy, you're just really over having to cook dinner every night.
It's
and,
true.
You know, to the point where your kids will look at macaroni and cheese that you made from scratch and be like, yuck. And you're like, what is your problem? What is everyone's problem? Which it really hit me here. I really felt seen reading that. But you also end the article on kind of a high note, a hopeful note. First of all, you've come to the decision that it is perfectly acceptable for anyone to just take the night off and make mac and cheese out of the box or make PB&J for dinner and call it. And also that there are ways of getting out of a cooking funk. So let's get into some of that. What are some of your ideas for us if we're just kind of like, oh, what now?
Well, I think, you know, part of the reason I sort of love cooking for people so much. It's like my family didn't love to cook. Like my mom hates to cook. She admits that freely and openly. And though she cooked for us every night. So even like working in food, I was always very aware that like not everybody loves this. And to some people, like it really feels like a chore. And so it's interesting sort of like having like loved cooking for the bulk of my adulthood, I've like arrived at this point where I just feel like it's really hard. And my audience has like a limited palate, my 4-year-old and my 2-year-old. But for me, I think it's like I come at it from two ways. One, you know, take the pressure off. Like I do try and feed the whole family. kind of the same thing, but like I let the kids lead. So like often we'll eat quesadillas and, you know, the adults can add spicy stuff or whatever they want.
Yeah, sure.
But I also, for me, as someone who does love to cook, I try and kind of dip back into the things that I really love. Like I love to bake, mm-hmm. and I'll always sort of like choose baking over savory stuff. And or just like, you know, like the quick meals and stuff. So like I made an applesauce cake a couple days ago. Not complicated. It's a thing my mom made when we were growing up. But it just was like the return on investment was so good that I was reminded like it doesn't have to be hard. Focus on like the pleasure, on the good outcome. And I think everyone kind of like can feel that.
Yeah.
Yeah, everyone ate it. So that was good.
And it was inspired by your mom, who you later learned was resentful if I didn't make that for you.
Yeah.
Okay, so your book, Ready, Set, Cook, is all about simple ways to not just make a meal, but to really have like in your back pocket stuff to make anything taste great, right? And I kind of also love that you have a little bit of this, what if they just made the whole plane out of the black box approach to cooking? you know, there's a recipe that our producer Sally is obsessed with, croutons with shrimp. And it's like, well, if croutons are the best part of any meal, as we all know, why not make the meal out of croutons? Right. So tell us about that dish and how it came to be.
Sure. So I have been obsessed with croutons since my youth, like since the salad bar days. And even my dad, who I would say like wasn't maybe paying attention to what I was putting on my plate. As an adult once, I was like, you know, eating the croutons off of the Caesar, and he was like, still with the croutons. So it was like a character trait. And so I knew I wanted to have them in the book. And I don't know, I just feel like I often have those bread nubbins around. It's like, it's not big enough to make toast, or it's like, you can't just make one slice of French toast. I mean, I guess you could, but the other kid will get mad. So so I often just save kind of the bits and pieces and then have croutons around, and you can use them for salad. You can use them like to crush up on top of pasta. But then I was like, oh, you can also use them to bulk up like your animal proteins or whatever. So shrimp I love. It's so quick cooking. And I don't know, instead of like throwing rice or pasta in there, it's like, you know, I would want to have toast. Croutons are abundant bits of toasts. So threw those in. I think that recipe, it's funny, recipe writers, I feel like we forget the recipe like as soon as it's printed, but has some chorizo in there as well. So you get like all this flavorful fat that you cook the shrimp in. And then the croutons, even though they're already toasted, soak up some of that juicy business in the pan. So I think it's maybe the fastest recipe in the book. It takes like 15 minutes. And it's got some wow.
Yeah, that's awesome. Can you just do a really quick description of the dish and like just super quick walk us through it?
Sure. So it starts with chorizo, which is super flavorful. And so you render some of that in a skillet. You add shrimp, sear them till they're just cooked through. And then you throw in some croutons, which hopefully you have around. And then it's done.
Bingo.
Yeah.
That's it. Amazing. You have also so many great ideas in the book. Talk about the post marinade. First of all, there should be like, it sounds like a musical icon.
Right.
In like 2029, there's going to be a musical icon named Post Marinade.
It'll be me. No, the post marinade, I actually learned from my friend Theo, who is an amazing cook who I worked with years ago. And her parents are Greek. And they used to make like a huge batch of like lemony, oregano, garlicky mix that they would just have around whenever they were grilling. And she says they would put everything in it, like including hot dogs and hamburgers.
So good.
Right? And I was like, oh, of course. So I tend to use it for chicken. That's kind of like on our regular rotation. So I typically do a mix of lemon zest, lemon juice, garlic, olive oil, and then kind of like fresh herbs if I have them, or like Italian seasoning if that's in the cupboard. And so then rather than having to think ahead and marinate something overnight, you can just sink whatever you grilled in that mixture after. And that works with your existing favorite marinade. If that's like bottled salad dressing, great. If that's, you know, something with brown sugar and soy sauce and sambal, awesome. So it kind of is applicable to all marinades. So you don't have to freak out if you forgot.
I love that, because it is something where, and to your point, if it's about, hey, I got to get dinner on the table quick, and oh my God, I forgot to marinate this, and you're supposed to marinate for 4 hours or overnight or even 30 minutes. You know, if you don't have the 30 minutes, I love the idea that just cook it first and then dunk it in the marinade and it'll soak up that flavor beautifully anyway. You know, it reminds me actually, the chef Ashley Christensen was on our show a while back, and she told me that when she's like grilling vegetables now, she doesn't always even season the vegetables before grilling. And now, and she's like gotten into, I'll just like, I remember the zucchini was her example. Like she'll grill the zucchini, cut it up while it's still hot, and then season it with salt and maybe, you know, a dressing or something like that. And because it's, when it's hot, it's expelling, right? Like the heat is pushing moisture out of it. And when it cools back down, it naturally is going to want to soak back in. And I was like, oh my God, that's brilliant. It actually has like a vacuum effect as it's cooling down. So I wonder if it's sort of a similar thing where like you throw it in the flavorful mix while it's hot, and as it cools, even, you know, for a few minutes, it'll soak it in, and that's just brilliant. You don't have to sit there and wait for 30 minutes or 4 hours or whatever.
Yeah. And it works also great for leftovers. So like make like double the chicken breasts or whatever, because as it sits overnight in the post-marinade, like it just is getting more delicious.
It's marinating.
Yeah.
Yeah, love it.
So, and then you'd like, you know, use it for lunch the next day, whatever.
Cool. We're talking with Dawn Perry, author of Ready, Set, Cook, and we'll be back with more with her in a minute. I'm Francis Lamb, and this is The Splendid Table from APM. Our show is supported by Hero Bread. You know, for a lot of us, bread has been a staple all our lives. Toast at breakfast, sandwiches at lunch, a nice buttered roll at dinner. It's comforting and delicious, and bread is often what we crave, but sometimes it can sit a little heavy after a meal. That's where Hero Bread comes in. They've created fluffy, delicious versions of the breads that we're used to, but that include no net carbs, 0 grams of sugar, and fewer calories. Oh, and there's more good stuff too, like protein and fiber. Hero Bread has everything from your daily sandwich loaf to tortillas or hot dog and hamburger buns. The products are flavorful, and they have something for every craving, from a dressed-up breakfast burrito to a late-night PB&J. They even have monthly small-batch drops of indulgent treats like 2-gram net-carb Hero Croissant or the 1-gram net-carb Hero Cheddar Biscuit. Don't give up being a breadhead. Hero Bread is offering 10% off your order. Go to hero.co and use code TABLE at checkout. That's table at hero.co. I'm Francis Lamb, and this is The Splendid Table, the show for curious cooks and eaters. We're talking with Dawn Perry right now. She's the author of Ready, Set, Cook. Let's get back to it with her. All right, let's take some callers.
Cool.
Let's go to Courtney.
Hi, I'm in Indianapolis, Indiana. My question is how to know what to be able to substitute in baking recipes and what not to. I really love experimenting, especially with flavor and even sometimes with different flours and leavening agents and those sorts of things. So when should I feel comfortable doing that, and when should I leave it alone? Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Courtney, for the question. And Dawn, I know you said you love baking, so... here you go.
I do. Okay. I would say a great place to start is just keep your ratios the same. From there, you really have some wiggle room. So I would say, like, if something calls for 1.5 cups of flour, you can play around within that 1.5 cup range. So, like, I will often, instead of 1.5 cups AP, we'll do, like, AP all-purpose flour. I'll use a cup of whole wheat and like 1/4 cup of oat flour and 1/4 cup of almond flour to change things up. Or like you could use 1 cup of all-purpose flour and 1/2 cup of cornmeal, something like that. Same goes for fat. Like if something calls for 1/2 cup of like that applesauce cake, for instance, the original recipe calls for 1/2 cup of shortening. but I was like, I'm going to make this with olive oil. So I also used a half a cup and it totally worked. So I would say if you keep those ratios the same, you're in a pretty good spot. Flavorings like extracts or dried spices, I think like kind of go for it. Like up to a teaspoon or something of most things will be okay. I would also say that if a recipe like is highlighting a specific ingredient, like if it's, you know, like a buttermilk berry cake or something, I think that's one of mine actually. Maybe like,
have I heard of that before? Yeah, that's a brilliant idea.
Like maybe keep that ingredient intact. Because perhaps that's providing something specific to the recipe. But otherwise, I think you can really have fun and change things around.
Yeah, right on. I do think with baking, as you said, like keeping the ratio is important because so many things in a baking recipe provide like structure or texture, or, you know, it may not be obvious. Like, I think swapping around flavors is easy. If it's like, you really like nutmeg instead of mace, go for it. Those two things are essentially the same thing anyway, but whatever. But, like, you know, I wouldn't take out a lot of sugar in a baking recipe because sometimes you need that sugar to provide the texture and the structure. But if you're still playing around within that same general quantity of that kind of ingredient, I think that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
Okay, let's go to Alex.
Hi, Splendid Table. This is Alex from Seattle. I am looking for ideas for feeding our family. My wife and I like to eat food that is fresh, mostly vegetables, big flavors. Our 4-year-old and 1-year-old like to eat hot dogs and macaroni and cheese. Mm-hmm. And pretty much the only type of food that is a win-win-win-win for everybody is things that are blended up, like April Bloomfield's kale puree on penne every week, or any sort of sog paneer or something like that. And I'm curious if you have any other ideas for foods that are delicious and blended that everyone might like. Thanks.
That is such a very specific...
It's so specific.
The one thing that works for all of us is food that's blended. Well, Alex, thank you so much for listening, and thank you for the question. And, I, you know, this is going to be a crazy thing to say, but I love blended foods. I love
what's
a puree.
What's not to like?
Yeah. And especially if it's like a sauce or a puree that's on the bottom of a plate.
Mm-hmm. My first idea was soup, which I hope is not lame. But point being, like, so you could make, you know, a tomato soup, a squash soup, a cauliflower soup, all that could be blended, but then you could change it up. So like you could put sliced hot dogs on top, you could top it with croutons, you could like put cubes of like seared paneer. So like if someone made me the kale puree every week, I would be so excited. But yeah, just maybe think of that, like you said, as a base. As a bulky base, and then kind of add on to it from there. And then you could maybe do it like old school fixins bar, so everyone can kind of top their own puree.
Oh, yeah. I love
their
that.
Own blend.
Well, yeah, and actually, cauliflower puree is a beautiful thing. And you can totally make it into like 20 different things just based on how much liquid you put in it.
Mm-hmm.
And like, if you take cauliflower and... you know, roughly chop it. You don't even have to like floret it out or whatever. Roughly chop it, simmer it in stock, in milk, cream, some combination of those three things, and then puree it in a blender. If you use a little bit less liquid, it won't be as quite as stiff as mashed potatoes, but you can use it as sort of like a base for a dish.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can thin it out a little bit. And then that can be a beautiful sauce or pasta. And just add different flavorings, like you said. Maybe today it's with brown butter and capers and parsley. And, you know, stir that in and that becomes a beautiful sauce for something. Or tomorrow you thin it out a little bit more and then you can top it with croutons and that's a beautiful cauliflower soup. Like, So I do think, you know, if you make a puree really tight, you can use it one way and then just loosen it with a little bit more liquid, a little bit more liquid, and you can turn it into sauce, into soup. Like the puree, sauce, soup continuum is infinite.
Yes. And you can do that, like you said, with anything. I mean, cauliflower, of course, but, you know, like sweet potatoes or squash, any of the greens, like that kale puree could be reinvented 100 ways too. So I think that's a great idea.
Yeah, you can keep getting variety and still have lots of blender action for your family.
Yeah.
Well, all right. Thanks for the great question, Alex. And Dawn, thanks so much for coming in. It was great to talk with you.
Thanks for having me. It's been great.
Dawn Perry is the author of Ready, Set, Cook: How to Make Good Food with What's on Hand. You can find a recipe for sparkly jam and nut tart at splendidtable.org. Hey, so big things are afoot here at the Splendid Table. Our family's growing. We're so happy to welcome a new baby to our family. It's not a human baby. It's a podcast. It's called The One Recipe, and it's all about that one awesome, no-fail, got-your-back-every-time recipe that every great cook has. It's hosted by the wonderful Jesse Sparks, and I'm so glad to get to introduce him to you today. So hey, Jesse, congratulations on the new show.
Oh my gosh, thank you so much. I appreciate it, Francis.
Well, tell us about yourself. Like, where'd you grow up? How'd you get interested in talking with people about food? Is that a normal thing?
Yes. So basically growing up, my family moved around a lot. We have family members in Pennsylvania and Michigan and Texas and Arizona. We're just all over the place. So no matter where we moved or where, you know, we were visiting for a little bit while we were with family, we were always talking about food. We were always gravitating to the dinner table or to the kitchen. So from early on, I always knew that the best place for the gossip or the food was always in the kitchen. And ever since then, I just never really left until people kicked me out. So it's worked out pretty well.
Why would you kick me out? Why would you kick
Don't
me
kick
out?
Don't kick me out, please. Yes.
And, you know, if you're growing up in lots of different places, you're making new friends in different places, you're constantly, you know, finding new people to surround yourself with. You know, I always have this theory that if you can talk about food and football, that you can have a conversation with 75% of people in America.
Oh, yeah. And as someone who grew up playing a lot of football and then stopped and, like, realized I don't really know all the rules that well, I always just defer to food. Yeah. You know, I know my lane. I know myself. This is a self-actualization, really.
I love that you don't know all the rules. Like,
you know, okay, I was a lineman. I was like, okay, just push the other people over or just hold them in place. Either or, those are the options. I didn't need the details. Yeah. Just did not know what I was doing. So ever since then, I've just stuck to my lane.
Yeah, I'm just looking for the barbecue after this.
Exactly.
All right, so tell us about the show, what you're excited about. What are some highlights of, I mean, I don't want you to give away too much. No spoilers, but I know you've recorded a few of these now. What are some exciting things you've talked to people about?
Oh my gosh, Francis, you can't reveal everything yet, but I can tell you a little bit.
Just a little.
I'll tell you a little bit. So basically, The One Recipe is an opportunity for me to talk to so many amazing food people across the industry that I love and adore about the recipes that they love and adore. It's really an opportunity to introduce new cooks to recipes that are both approachable or, you know, slight reaches, an opportunity to introduce experienced cooks to, you know, things that they may not have tried before or techniques that completely turn their expectations upside down. Mm-hmm. And, you know, anyone in between, the kick in the pants they need to just get cooking again.
Right on.
So it's a lot of fun.
Right on. So what's your one recipe?
Oh my gosh, just so many questions. It's like you're a radio show host, podcast host, multi-hyphenate host. This recipe took me so much time and so much deliberation to just finally settle on one. And I have to go with Kate Davis's brown butter and toffee chocolate chip cookies from Bon Appetit.
Oh, yeah.
So this was a reader-submitted recipe. And for the longest time growing up, I was always like, yeah, I recognize and see the value in like those good old American staples, you know, the peanut butter and jellies of the world. But I was always a little underwhelmed by some of the classics, you know, because at the end of the day, you can only eat so many standard chocolate chip cookies before it just becomes another chocolate chip cookie.
Sure, yeah, yeah.
But this one really just changed it all around. The brown butter brings out so much more depth that always feels missing when you're just eating something super sweet with no balance. There's a little bit more salt in there just to like offset some of that sweetness too and make that brown butter really feel toasty and at home. And then the toffee just kind of adds those spikes of just sweet and texture. So it's not just, you know, a super cakey cookie or one of those like obviously stale chocolate chip cookies out of a grocery store bag, but instead it's something fresh. It's something soft. The edges just get crisp enough so that you still have that delightful first bite, but it's not just going to be like super brittle and kind of shatter in your mouth either. And last but not least, I'm obsessed with the fact that they switch out those chocolate chips. No disrespect to chocolate chips, but the chocolate discs are just a little bit better. I typically prefer to use. Oh, yeah. So they're big, just they're not hockey pucks, but they're reasonably close, or like as close as you can get while still feeling responsible and like an adult. And when they melt, they just make these beautiful pools of just silken chocolate that are so much more satisfying than a single chip can provide.
Oh, man.
Like perfectly bitter, perfectly sweet chocolate. And it all just really comes together and sings. So
that sounds awesome.
Yeah. In a lot of ways, it just feels like what I want the one recipe to be, you know? An opportunity to try something new, to experiment, and to take things that we may have known before and not really considered and, you know, completely turn them on their heads. So it's a fun opportunity and a fun recipe.
I love that.
Thank you. Yeah, I hope you make it. Please let me know how you like them if you do.
Yeah.
Please don't tell me you're a chocolate hater.
No, God, no. But I am a lazy baker, so maybe what I'll do is, you know, subtly suggest to various friends and family, hey, you should check this recipe out. Oh, are you baking that this weekend?
Right. Oh, I'll just come over. It's convenient. Yeah, exactly. Well, before we get too far down the line, I do have a question for you, Francis.
Yeah.
What is your one recipe?
You're just going to have me on your show, man. You just need to invite me over.
Well, so I am here out of the goodness of my heart, out of charity and kindness, and I can't even get an honest response. Yeah, well, that's okay. Yeah. That's okay.
Have we'll me over sometime. To it. Bake some cookies. Yeah.
Oh, easy. Easy said and done. So I look forward to having you on the podcast and to hearing your one recipe.
Right on. Well, thanks for coming on, Jesse. It's great to talk with you.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Jesse Sparks is a senior editor at Eater and host of our new podcast, The One Recipe. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts and find us on Instagram at the.one.recipe. Well, that's our show for the week. Hope you enjoyed it. And remember, if you ever have any cooking questions for us, record them as a voice memo on your phone and email them to contact@splendidtable.org. We'll talk to you next week. Our show is produced by APM, and hey, every week we put together a newsletter to make your midweek cooking a little easier. It's called Weeknight Kitchen, and it's free. Sign up at splendidtable.org. APM Studios are run by Chandra Kavati, Alex Schaffert, and Joanne Griffith. Beth Perlman's our executive producer, and The Splendid Table is created by Sally Swift and Lynn Rosetto Casper. It's made every week by technical producer Jennifer Lukey, producer Erica Romero, digital producer James Napoli, and managing producer Sally Swift. I'm Francis Lamb, and this is APM Studios. All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Soul to Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Soul to Story are available now.